speed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. Hey, come on in. If you don't have a penny or two, well, grab one out of the bowl over there on the counter. Yeah, help yourself. What's a penny or two between friends, right? That's what I think, anyway. How are ya? Today is Wednesday, the 23rd of April, 2025. Can you believe it? The year is a third over. That's not so bad. That means there's two-thirds left. Isn't that right? Yeah, that's about right. And that's about good. And that's about time. And it's about place. And it's about, you know, that's a TV show. That was a TV show with Imogene Coca and Joey Ross. And it was strange and it was ridiculous. But two astronauts went back in time to prehistoric days. And it was oh so silly. But I watched it. I can still sing the theme song, but luckily for everyone, I won't. So how are ya? How is you in the world? That's not how I meant that to come out. How are you in the world? How is the world? Well, we all know how the world is. And you know what? We're dealing with it. We're dealing with it, and we're dealing with it excellently. So says I. And I believe it to be true. I really do. I think we can deal with things pretty darn well. And I'm convinced of that. So let's make that our motto. I'm doing just fine. Thank you. Thank you. Got some things to talk about today. I'm a little like that today, so you can expect some, you know, I'm going to talk about some things. I'm going to talk about greed, because there's a lot of it lately in the world, and I frankly am a bit irritated by it, about it, with it. I'm sick and tired of it, and it is everywhere, and I think it's up to us to call it when we see it. You know, I was an umpire for some years, and girls softball, you know, boys baseball, you know. I actually never did boys baseball, but boys softball, men's and women's, you know, which was no fun just because they're so argumentative. It's like, come on, just let me do my job. But girls slow pitch, girls fast pitch, and fast pitch, I mean fast pitch. Whew. Man, talk about talent. But anyway, so the point is that greed has become something that I'm not happy about. There was something that happened today that absolutely rattled my chains, if I can put it that way. And I'll tell you about that in just a minute. But first, I would like to talk about the passing of the Pope. Now, I'm not a Catholic, and but I grew up with a lot of friends who were Catholic. My mom went to a Catholic school in Egypt, run by French nuns. And she certainly liked them, and she loved the Pope, which was always confusing to me because I didn't know all that. But we're going to talk about this concept of greed for a reason. And I think that it's an important reason because it affects us. It affects us in a very specific way. I'm just going to guess here, just a wild guess, that no one I'm talking to today is an oligarch. No one is a billionaire trying to take over the world. And most of the people I'm talking to are people who work hard and have worked hard in their lives and aren't necessarily the type who have, you know, $1 million in the bank. You may have. If so, God bless you. And I'm guessing if you're listening to me that you are very generous in what you have, with what you have, and that you do as much as you can to help others. I've read for the other types, the oligarchs, and I have said more and more than one occasion that I would never want to trade one second of their lives. You know, I just wouldn't, because their problems are very different than my problems. My problems are minuscule compared to theirs. Their problems are gigantic. Sure, they've got amazing benefits that I don't have, but they also don't understand the benefits that I have, nor do I think they could truly admire the things that I admire. They don't have access to some of the things that I have access to that are very simple. At least in my mind, they're very simple. You know, on my desk, I have a red dye and a black dye. The red dye has black spots, and the black dye has red spots, and they can't see the joy in that and the wonder in that and realize that those two dice can access an immense amount of information, an immense amount of wonder, and they never will, because that doesn't matter to them. And they would just as soon, you know, brush me into a dustpan as anything else. And they're missing a great deal by that. You know, and I'm just saying, I've read for people who don't value things the way, the same type of things that you and I do. But that's neither here nor there. We'll talk about that. But Pope Francis, who I think was essentially a very good man, he was a humble man. He dedicated his life to service. And he was an honest man. I really get that from him. And always did. He took a vow of poverty. And not all priests. I've met a lot of priests in my life. One of the first priests I got to know was when I was working at Jack in the Box when I was a kid. Father Henry. He came through. He'd come through at night just drunk out of his mind. And he wasn't defrocked, I don't think, but he was no longer, you know, he no longer had a parish, but he had been a priest in World War II, and he'd come by the Jack late at night, and I was on the swing shift, you know, like 7 to 2, and we'd always hang around and, you know, talk about everything. But Father Henry would come in, and he'd be just drunk as a skunk, but he was an alcoholic, so he did it well. You know, he was able to hang in there. And he'd say, you know, he was Irish. And they'd say, would you buy a priest? And he wasn't dressed in his cassock or his, you know, with a man of the cloth outfit. He'd say, would you buy an old priest a fish sandwich and a cup of coffee? That's right. That was his thing, a fish sandwich and a cup of coffee. And I'd say, sure, because I liked him. There was something about him, even though he was, obviously he'd spent all his money on booze, but I really liked him. And we'd talk. And he, you know, found out I was Egyptian in heritage and my parents were from Egypt, and he had done some time in Egypt in the war. And he said, oh, the Egyptians and their lamb. And that was a true thing, you know. And so he said, I would love to come to your house for dinner. And so I was going to ask my mom to have him come over for dinner. And it just so happened that my brother, due to a set of circumstances, went to Catholic school. And so I talked to my mom, and she called the Monsignor at the local parish at the Catholic school. And he said, oh, Henry, we're just keeping tabs on him, you know. And we don't have him over for dinner. You know, it'll never go away, for one thing. But number two, he's incorrigible. He came to us through Pittsburgh, and we're getting ready to try and find a place to send him. He was a priest in World War II, and he was captured by the Nazis and blah, blah, blah. And one day he came by the jack. I said, "I'm sorry, Henry, I can't have you come over." He said, "Ah, was that Monsignor, you know?" And he started talking. He got on a rant, and he was talking away. He said, "Here, yeah, you heard about the Nazis, didn't you?" And he said, "Well, here's what they did to me." And he opened up his shirt. And he said, "You see this cross I wear?" And certainly enough, here was this cross around his neck. And it looked like it had been melted. And he said, "Here's what the Nazis did to me. They told me to take off my cross, and I wouldn't. So they burned it on me." And sure enough, around it was all this burnt skin and this melted cross. And he lifted it up, and you could see that underneath it was just horrible. And I just felt for this poor guy, you know. And he was a priest. Why would I tell that story? It was hard. You know, he was quite a guy, and you could tell that he had been through an absolute ringer. And so the coldness I felt from his own church, and yeah, he was a drunk, and probably maybe, I don't know anything else about him. There could have been a lot of problems, obviously, but it really hurt my feelings when I was a kid. And so I had kind of a negative feel after that. And I've met a lot of priests. I was actually a former Catholic priest, plagiarized me. I've told that story before. So that didn't help. And then Pope Francis came along. And here was a man who was very different, who said that gay people were fine, that they should be in the church, that there was really essentially nothing wrong with having them in the church, that let's welcome them, that they're souls were as good as anybody else's. And, you know, a lot of people didn't agree with that. And here's a man who didn't live in this palace that they give popes. Instead, he lived in pretty, you know, humble little room and didn't wear all the fancy clothing. He wore what he had to wear for his station. He eschewed the raiments of opulence, because they embarrassed him, because he took a vow of poverty. And I and yet the Catholic Church is incredibly wealthy. And here's a man who washed the feet of people like you and me and kissed them. You know, and I just thought, man, here's a guy, a regular guy. So what bothers me is that another man of peace, another man of spirituality, has left a hole in leadership. I don't know if you read what Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote on the day he died. I think it was the day he died. But if it was about the Pope, then that's unbelievably heinous and up to her. And her own, you know, whatever, but I'll let you look it up. I'm not going to repeat it. But there are a lot of people who feel that way. This sense of intolerance. And I'm sick and tired of intolerance. That should be a meme, shouldn't it? I'm sick and tired of intolerance. I'm just really, you know, when do we finally get it? I mean, we who are on a path, you know, the Dalai Lama is not a young man. I think he's older than I am by a few years. I think he's in his late 70s. And I hope he hangs around for a long time. See, what we don't really kind of get is that every person of peace who is able to maintain the charisma that they have and to gather people around him or herself and maintain that nexus of importance, of power, changes the world. That's just a fact. There is an element of intrinsic energy and power that makes a big difference. It really, truly does. And so, look at the way the world is going right now. It's going to oligarchies. It's going to authoritarianism. And those are people who are not overly empathetic. They're just not. There's a couple stories I would love to tell you, but I can't because I can't because of professional guidelines. I just can't tell you because they were told to me under professional ethical standards, and I just can't repeat them. But trust me, there is not a lot of empathy in high places right now. And I heard the stories, and I was like, oh my God, these are people who run the world. These are people with immense power, the most powerful people in the world. And they just don't care about others. And yet here was a man who, on the last day of his life, essentially, insisted against doctor's orders that he go out and be with the people, because that was, in his mind, the most important thing that he can do, even if it meant his demise. And God bless him for that. You know, we have to admire that in other people, people who are willing. You know, when I blew my back out, and it was bad. I mean, I had a ruptured disc and a bulging disc, and I was in agony. And yet I made commitments before that happened to do yo-yo shows and things like that. And this is not saying, oh, look at me, but I felt pretty responsible. And it was a long-term thing because I had to lose some weight, okay, a fair amount of weight before I could have the surgery. And I realized I had to do these things. And I just believe in, if you have a responsibility, if you say you're going to do something, you better follow through with it. Only once did I not follow through with something, and I felt pretty bad about it. And that was because I had to have a tonsillectomy. And I couldn't do a show that I was supposed to do. And a guy was really mad at me. And I said, I'm sorry. And he said, you're a rat. And, you know, it broke up a friendship. But that was unfortunate. It was unfortunate. But the doctor was the only time he could fit me in. And I was constantly sick. And I still feel bad about that. But that's the way it goes. Sometimes you just can't help but be a louse, you know. But we have duties that we have to fulfill. And I think our primary duty is to other people, and not to just stuff as much money into our pockets as we can, but with the adage on our t-shirts that say, he who dies with the most toys wins. Damn it, that pisses me off. Excuse me for that. But it just really gets under my skin. It gets a burr under my blanket, as we here in the West say all the time. We don't. But it just really annoys me, because there are kids in our neighborhoods that don't have enough to eat every night before they go to bed. Hungry children, for God's sake. Hungry children. Hungry children. People who have all the money in the world don't even have a concept of what hungry children means. I've seen hungry children. I've been on the street, and I've been hungry. Couldn't tell by looking at me now, but I've been hungry. And I know what it means. And I know what it means to be shivering cold and not know how you're going to warm yourself up. And I know what it means to be somewhere and be terrified, because you don't know if someone's going to come and do something to you. You know, when you spend your night huddled behind a dumpster because it's the safest place to be. And there are millions of people like that on the streets of this, the richest country on the planet. Why? Why? You know why as well as I know why. And here you and I are. And we are good people. You know that. So we have to just kind of, man, we've got to do the best we can. But it's our thoughts. Our thoughts are powerful. Don't think they're not. They are powerful. And we just have to constantly reinforce the fact that we do have power. If you don't think there's power, look at what's happening around you today, right now. Right now. You don't think we have the power to affect things? Think again. Think again. If you don't follow the news, just take a look at the price of Tesla stock, as what it was going for about 6 months ago. Okay? And that's the power of us. You and me. Okay? We have power, but it's more than that. It's the power of we have to be positive and to carry the light. What light? The light of goodness, the light of our own spirituality against that of those who don't care about anything but their own pockets and greed. I've never understood greed, you know. I am greedy when it comes to knowledge. I'm obsessively greedy when it comes to knowledge. I can't stand not knowing something that I want to know about. It drives me nuts. When something comes up and I think, oh my God, I got to know about that. Well, I've got to know about that. And I will exhaust myself, quite frankly, to find out as much about it as I can. Now, in this age, in the cyber information age, it's a lot easier. Back 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when I was a kid, I damn near lived in the library, the public library, and then I discovered the university library. My dad was a professor, so I would go to school with him, and I would just say, yeah, Dad, can I go to the library? And he'd say, okay. And he'd say, you have to check in with me every now and then. And I would. But my God, when I discovered that, my dad took a sabbatical to Stanford University. And I went to, that was my first year of college. And so I would go hang out when I wasn't in school. I did not go to school at Stanford. I went to a junior college. Best education I had in college, my entire college career. My entire, it was that junior college, Foothills Junior College in Los Altos Hills. It was great. What a great time that was. But I would go to the Stanford Stacks, and oh my God, that was like a candy store for me, because the information there was unbelievable. Just the stuff they had on Egyptology drove me out of my mind. I was so happy. It was like a little kid. But the point is that that's where my insatiable desire goes. It doesn't have to do with wanting to control people, you know? There's an old saying that all cruelty is based in weakness and insecurity. I can't remember who said it, but that is a Greek. One of them highfalutin Greeks, as it says in the music man. But the point is that what we have to do is recognize the fact that there is such a lack of moral standing anymore that I think it's up to us to call it out when we see it, if not openly, at least to understand it ourselves and go from there. This is what set me off. So this morning, a phone call. You know, and there's so much chicanery, so many shenanigans nowadays, I don't even answer my phone. Maybe you're like me. I wait for the message, and if it's something that I need to call back. I mean, how many of you have gotten the text message about the toll roads? I got another one of those, well, maybe an hour ago, that I had to delete and, you know, send off, because it's a scam. You know, it's something that wants to steal all your information. This is the age we live in, but it's our age. It's the age you and I live in. And there's something very powerful about that. Yes, it's annoying. Yes, it's certainly, but we're here now. And I believe there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. We're here now for a reason, to rise up and be a part of something. I love that. I was talking to someone yesterday, and he said, how are you dealing with all of this? I said, I'm a history major. I was a history major in college, I should say. I was a history major in college, so I'm getting a kick out of this. No, it's not a lot of fun, but I'm getting a real kick out of seeing it and watching it and knowing that we are, the people that we are seeing in real time are going to be in history listed as the worst ever person to do this, the most outrageous this and that, the most corrupt this and that. And there's something heady about that. And we're seeing it right now. There's something wild about that. I love it. It's really good for me, you know? And yes, it's hard. But I am really up on this. We are making a difference. Even if we just snort and sniff and you know, spit between our teeth. I can do that. I have a big gap between my teeth, you know. So, you know, what happened was I get this phone call and it's someone cold calling. But we, a year ago, just about, had to put in one of those stair lifts chairs for my wife. She has arthritis in her knees, in her spine, in her neck. And she has a very difficult time walking, and stairs are horrific for her. And we have, our laundry room is in the basement. And I've offered to try and do it and to learn how to do it, but she absolutely does not trust me to do the laundry, you know, which I have to admit, it stings a little bit, but on the other hand, I probably would mess it up, you know. I'm kind of a klutzy guy, and my mind wanders a bit. So, you know, who knows? But and I think she actually, it's something that she wants to do. It's something she feels accomplishment about. So we had to, you know, just to be honest, we had to borrow the money to do it and put this gadget. And it's not a huge staircase, but it's a staircase to the basement. And no one said anything to us about a maintenance program that's required for the lifetime warranty on this gadget. And so this was the first I found out about it today. And it's $700 a year. And I thought, you greedy, greedy people. It made me very angry. And so there's stuff coming in the mail and we can look it over. And that's probably the worst case scenario. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts to this thing. We have to look it over. But I thought, how dare you take advantage of seniors this way? We are seniors. And how dare you do this to people? And I thought, of course they dare do it, because seniors are suckers in that way. Because they're, you know, they figure we've got money coming out of our ears. We don't. You know, as so many seniors are. And right now, we're especially on a tightrope, as all seniors are. And I thought, this is greed. This is greed. And we're seeing so much greed lately. And so this got me, along with the Pope, thinking about the seven deadly sins, which are frankly, and I'm not even Christian, you know, who knows what I am? I say I'm a Druid, more or less, but even new Druidism, I was actually, my friend Frodo, who was indeed a bona fide Druidic priest, he inducted me. That's not the right word. Well, he brought me in, and I went ahead and, you know, did a little something for him, and we're, you know, brothers in arms. Well, brothers in wands. And so, supposedly, in his order, I would be recognized. Of course, I don't know. They probably wouldn't. They'd probably put me in a wicker man and set it on fire or something. I don't know what they would do. But I hope he's doing well. He was a genuinely a good guy. Very intense, but a very good guy. But I love the concept of the seven deadly sins. And I learned it quite a bit ago because I was so fascinated by the idea of these things that you can do that kind of bum everybody out. You know, it's like, but I learned it by the Pal of Ages, but we won't worry about that. But here's the big one. So we're talking about greed, and there are demons attached to each of these. And I'm of a belief that if there is such a thing as demonology of demons, and many people believe in them and so on and so forth, but I believe that if there is a demon sort of thing, that all demons are manifested from the inside out, that they're constantly, there would be more or less a sense of demons being, demon seed being on the inside. And here's the other thing, for every demon, there is an antidote. And we'll talk about that, you know? So what we're seeing now is this incredible sense of greed everywhere. The whole thing about cutting the government cutting all these programs like cancer research and Meals on Wheels. Think of all the people who are going hungry because they're not getting their food. And a lot of these people are elderly people who don't have family anymore. And they're just, suddenly Meals on Wheels is gone and they don't get to eat. And they don't have family, and maybe no one is looking out for them. It makes me crazy. It just makes me completely nuts that this is happening. Why? So they can cut funds. So why? To pay for tax cuts for other people. And who are these people? Oh, are they you and me? To cut taxes for me and you? And maybe people who are really poor and need to have their taxes cut? No, that's not who it's for. You know who it's for. Cha-ching. And I think that just is the epitome. And, you know, the Roman Empire fell. But see, that's not going to work. Why? Because people like us are rising up. Which really turns me on, you see. You know, and you don't have to go carry a sign. You don't have to go to a dealership and shake your fist. You have to think it. You have to be honest about what you're doing. And we the tarot readers, we the astrologers, we the people who believe, we the people who have heart and have strength. We, the people who know in our hearts what makes sense and who believe in the truth, we the ones who make a difference. You know, it's important to us. So, greed. We'll start with that as one of the seven deadly sins. It's ruled by Mammon. You've probably heard of Mammon, right? Mammon. That's one of the first. We'll start with Mammon. And the concept of greed, the concept of wanting it all. For what? What are you going to do with it? Remember King Midas, that story? It didn't work out. He didn't get to eat. He turned his daughter into gold. Not a good story. Supposedly Midas was real. And maybe he was. Maybe he was. Pride is the one I always start off with. Why? Because Lucifer was really kind of the first big story there. Adam and Eve, and he comes in as this big snake, and he's beautiful. In Paradise Lost, which is a good read. But if you read Paradise Lost, make sure, by John Milton, make sure to read Paradise Lost out loud. Because that's how it's meant to be read. Boy, the first time I read it, I was told by my English teacher in California, in Los Altos Hills. He said, read it out loud. So here I am at night in my room, reading out loud Paradise Lost. And my parents probably thought I was nuts. And it was one of the most amazing things to read. Because when Lucifer comes into the Garden of Eden, he makes his appearance for the first time. Because he gets into a bet with God. You know, God says, I want you to bow to this creature I've created. This is the perfection of all my creations. This is man, ecce homo. You know, look, behold, man, kneel to him. And Lucifer says, you've got to be kidding me. I will not bow and kneel to this thing you've created. I will only kneel to you, my Lord, for I love you, but I will not kneel to this thing. I will not kneel to this thing. I will only kneel to you. And God says, if you love me, you will kneel to this. This is my perfection. This is my creation. Ah, man, it sounds like Frankenstein a little bit. Wonder if that was intended. Huh. Mary Shelley was brilliant. Mary Wollstonecraft was absolutely screamingly brilliant. If you haven't read Frankenstein, I highly suggest it. It is an amazing sociological book. It's about society. And it's about society when she wrote it in the 1700s. Late 1700s into the 1800s. I don't know. But into now. It's now. It is still now. It's not a monster story, except the monster is society. She was a social reformer. Her father, Daddy Wollstonecraft, excuse me, I don't remember his name, was a social reformer. She grew up in a house because children were starving. People were rich. It was an amazing time. Wow, does that sound familiar? There were oligarchs running places. They were called the royalty, the monarchy, you know? But anyway, so we look at Lucifer and he says, I'm not going to bow to this creature. And he says, I'm going to prove to you, that it's not, that this creature is not worth bowing to. And God says, you can't do that. He says, I'm going to prove it to you. And so God says, essentially, get out. If you're not going to bow, then I don't want you here. You're rebelling against me. That's not allowed. And so Lucifer is the most beautiful of all of his angels. He's a right-hand man. Well, angel. And so he kicks him out. Kicks he and his denizen of helpers out. And they land, you know, they land in hell, essentially. And they're ugly. They're just hideous. When they land down there, they land with these big bloppy thuds, you know, flop, flop, flop. And they're hideous. And they look at each other and they're ashamed and they're horrified at the way they look. Because they're no longer basking in the glory of God. I mean, it's just a wonderful story. It's written so beautifully. And Milton was blind by the time he really got going on this, so he had to dictate it to his sister. Boy, that's interesting, because Melville also dictated Moby Dick to his sister. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that absolutely fascinating? What makes you wonder? Or did Milton dictate it to his wife? I think it was his sister. Anyway, so we go on some more, and Lucifer says, who's with me? Who's with me? Who's with me to prove to God? So what he's doing, he's trying, by corrupting mankind, Lucifer is trying to show his love to God. Now, doesn't that put an interesting spin on things? I think it does. That's not my idea. That's the old story. I mean, that's John Milton, who was in fact a puritanical thinker. So he comes into Eden, where Adam and Eve are kind of grazing like cattle, and that is exactly what he means for that to be, because they really aren't thinking, oh, that's pretty, you know. And Lucifer comes in as a serpent, and he's erect, and I don't mean that way. He's not slithering on the ground. He is standing upright, and he's huge, and he comes in not slithering on the ground, but completely upright. He's that high, and that's how he comes in, and he's beautiful, and I just love that. So he's cursed to writhe on the ground forever after he seduces Eve and all of that stuff. And that's the story from that. And his evil is pride. And when you know the story and you understand that he was beautiful and what he goes through to fool God and you know, to get into Eden and everything he does, it gives you this idea of whatever people will go through. It's a great story, you know, but that's pride. Gluttony is Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies. When you think of like something you've seen, maybe a carcass on the ground covered with flies, that's gluttony. And when you think of someone, you've seen someone like in a gluttonous act, and you think of those flies, ugh, right? Satan is anger, wrath, because really Lucifer, after that episode, becomes wrathful, becomes Satan. Envy is Leviathan, because the Leviathan, of course, is the giant whale. But when we think of envy, envy overtakes us. I love these because they really are so descriptive. Greed is Mammon. We talked about him. Sloth. Sloth is Balthagar, who's this giant, fat, sweaty, and lust is Asmodeus. Asmodeus, who just the name, lust. Lasciviousness is the other word for it. Lasciviousness. The desire for flesh all the time. So these seven, and each one has a counteraction. And those are not in play anymore, you know. And I'm not a goody-goody two-shoes. Please don't make the mistake of thinking that. Because I'm not. Never really have been. But the opposite of sloth is diligence. Now, when you find the right thing in your life, you're diligent with it. My wife is constantly on me about doing certain things, and she said to me not so long ago, when you find the right thing that you want to do, nothing can stop you from doing it. Nothing can stop you from learning it and mastering it. And I thought, and that was not meant as a compliment at the moment, but I took it as a compliment because she's right. Aren't we all that way when something absolutely just lights our fuse? Aren't we going to do anything it takes? So I think that something like sloth, to me, it has to do with societal norms. We're often tossed into something that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, us. And that's part of why I'm really glad I found Tarot and astrology and the world of metaphysics, because otherwise, I'm not sure where I would have ended up in society, maybe living in a cardboard box, because I couldn't make sense out of it. That's why greed doesn't make any sense to me. I don't want to have all the money. I mean, if I had all the money, I would give all the money away. There's an actor. Oh, what's his name? I know who he is. I can see his face. I don't remember his name. He played Prime Minister of England. Oh, God, I can't remember even the name of Tony Blair. He played Tony Blair in a movie. He's at other, you know, and he gives literally all his money away and is essentially poor because he doesn't want the money. Jeremy Renner has given away a lot of his money. There are people who literally don't see the use in keeping it. And if I came into a great deal of money, I would feed children, as many as I can. And that was the purpose of this country for a long time, was to feed people in other countries and to make sure that they were taken care of and that they were healthy and that we were benevolent. And a lot of that has changed. And that is because the people in charge were not benevolent. And not everyone has been benevolent. But that's going to change again. Because I think the soul of who we are is. Even though this country was not founded with full benevolence, I still maintain that. That's not for here nor there. Wrath, anger, patience is the antidote to that. Patience. Are you patient? I've had to learn patience. Boy, I tell you what, I realize now that much of my life has led me to this time in my life to be patient, to learn patience, and I've learned it. I've learned about being patient. I still have impatience from time to time, but I have learned that if you're not patient, you are not going to be happy. If there's only one thing that you learn in life, only one thing, patience is one of those things, or maybe the, if you only learn one thing, have one of those things be patience. It's very important. So much anger comes from the inability to just sit and say, I have to wait. I have to wait. I get disappointed a lot. I've had a lot of disappointment in my life, especially surrounding love. I'll be honest with you. I'm a heavy-duty lover. Wait a minute, let me rephrase that. I love deeply. I love completely. I throw everything I have into love. I love unconditionally. I love totally. And when that love is yanked away from me, it breaks my heart, and it hurts. And it can become, it doesn't become wrath or anger. It becomes pain, and that can become wrath. But usually not so much, because the love is still there. That's the thing. The love never goes away from me. What can I say? Gluttony. The other side of gluttony is temperance. Right there in your tarot deck. 14, right? Art card in the Crowley deck. Temperance. The art he's talking about is alchemy, which is a very important subject, which I may take on one day in this show. On this show. Maybe. Maybe. Temperance. Just tempering refers to metallurgy, being strong, because when you temper metal, you have to anneal metal, which is fire and water, fire and ice, you see, as the song by Pat Benatar goes. You have to make sure that you don't make it brittle. Our emotions can be brittle. Our inner self can be brittle. We can become extremely brittle. We can. That's a whole show. Envy. Envy. Now, the classical retort for envy is kindness. Well, how does that go? Well, because envy is so huge. Envy is wanting what someone else has or hating them for having it. If you can look at what other people have and really say, I'm happy for them, and be kind to them, and not that false kindness, you know, not that passive-aggressive crap, and really think to yourself, I'm glad they have what they have. That's pretty kind. It's hard for a lot of people. I've known a lot of envious people. I truly don't envy anybody. Because I'm so grateful for what I have. Number one is life. You may remember I lost a close friend in February. And he actually had given up, frankly. And I tried everything I could think of to help him not to do that. But I could not do that. But we have to try kindness. Lust, lasciviousness, chastity. I don't buy that one. It's not about chastity. It's about realizing that lust is the strength card in the Crowley deck. It's realizing that there's more to it than just the physical. It's by realizing that the physical is fine, but there has to be something deeper in it than just the physical. If you focus on just the physical, you're missing out. It's a much deeper relationship than just touch. There's has to be love there, too. So it's find the deeper, I say. Greed. Well, we'll come back to that. Pride. Well, what is it about pride? You become pope? How many popes have been prideful? I think I've seen some who seem to show that, and really the antidote for that is humility. Humility. And we saw that recently. And then greed. What is the antidote for greed? What do you do? Generosity. Sincerity. So many people think that they are above others, which I've never understood. I've never felt better than anybody. Never. I've been around a lot of people who have felt that way. And I've never understood it. Never. If you look at misers in literature, some of them are doomed, like Ahab on the Pequod, on Moby Dick. You're saying he's not. Was he a miser? Yeah, he was a miser because he ruled that ship. And his idea was that everything he did was up to him. He ruled that ship with an iron fist. He was willing to take that ship down. He didn't care about other people. He was an autocrat. He was going to take it down if he had to, just so that he could exact his revenge on Moby Dick. It was wrath, right? It was gluttony. It was all of it in one big ball of hatred for that white whale that took his leg, a force of nature. Scrooge, there's a beautiful example. Ebenezer Scrooge. And there's a story with a real moral that no one is beyond redemption. Fagin in Oliver Twist, he's a miser. And he uses children, you know, to exact his goal, which is greed. I mean, we look at these stories about these horrible people and realize that they're nothing more than a reflection of real life. Real life. And these companies, like the pharmaceutical companies, that know that what they're doing is harming people, killing people, and they cover it up. Or car companies that know that their cars are bombs waiting to happen if they get rear-ended. And they know it because they've done the research. But it's, you know, collateral damage. And it's okay. They can write it off. And hopefully it won't happen to too many people. How can we live in a... Well, we do live in a society like this. So we just have to say, okay, that's the way it is. But it upsets me. Do I have an answer? No. I have to accept it. I don't have to accept it. I'm wrong. I don't have to accept it. So I'm going to fight it. But I guess I'll do the best I can. I'm an idealist. But I'm not just going to sit back. I'm going to speak out against it. I guess I'm doing that today. We who have a higher standard must hold others accountable when they don't. That's all I'm saying. You see? That's all I'm going to say. And until I see in writing what I'm dealing with this chair company, I'm not going to mention their name. But when I do see what I'm dealing with, trust me, their name will be mentioned. But it's only... They're only one of many, and people now are going that direction too. And I think we have a responsibility to be different. We are different, or you wouldn't be listening. And to speak out and to say, I am different. And it doesn't matter whether it comes from a religion, or it doesn't matter whether it comes from a science fiction movie, a novel, The Force, it doesn't matter. If we like it, We can cherry pick whatever we want and make it a part of our philosophy. I use Tarot all the time as an example in my life. I use it and I think about things that I see. I think about things that I do. Our own lives are exemplars of how we want to live and how we should live. And that's the beauty of the metaphysical path, because it's not mired in dogma. Because dogma will drag you down and force you to wear a particular collar if you're not careful. And right now, people are trying to collar us. And that's wrong. And I, for one, am not ready for that. I like roaming around a little bit, especially in my head. You know, that's just me. Well, that was a rant. That was one heck of a rant. Thank you for hanging in there with me. We're going to make it. I know we are. We're not only going to make it, we're going to excel. Because that's who we are. We always do. We always break through. We always break on through to the other side, don't we? Because that's exactly what we're about. And that's what we always will be. God, I love being alive. I love the challenges. They are exhilarating to me. And being here with you is certainly exhilarating to me. And I love each and every one of you listening. Thank you for doing so. Thank you for being here. And until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.